Sunday, July 23rd. My name is Kent Kirkteam, and we're interviewing Roberto Bustos. Mr. Bustos, would you give me your full name and spell it for me, please?
It's Roberto Armando Bustos. Roberto R-O-B-E-R-T-O. A. Bustos, B-U-S-T-O-S.
Okay, and where were you born?
I was born in Arizona, a little small town, Eloy, Arizona.
That's where?
In Arizona.
I mean, what's it near?
You could say it's between Phoenix and Tucson.
Right in the middle of the state, then? Okay, and when was that, your birth?
May 7th, 1942.
And your parents' name, please?
Francisco Bustos and Maria Bustos.
Okay. And what did they do for a living when you were born or when you were growing up?
Well, my father was a farm worker all his life.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was a homemaker.
What, your father migrated or did he work in Arizona?
Well, he migrated. He came from Mexico, was born in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Then he migrated to Texas, New Mexico, and then the last stop was in Arizona.
What I meant to ask, did he follow the crops?
Yes, he did follow the crops, yes. Yeah. But he settled down in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I was born, and that's where most of the kids were raised.
And so what kind of crops was he working in Arizona?
Well, when we talk about farm workers, they work in all the crops.
Mm-hmm.
The majority, I think, was cotton.
Cotton?
Cotton was a big thing out there in Arizona.
Uh-huh.
So he did a lot of work in the cotton and the sugar beets and potatoes. But the majority was cotton in those years back then.
Mm-hmm. Did you go to school there?
Yes, I did.
Where'd you go to school?
Eloy, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Eloy Elementary and then Union High School.
Mm-hmm. And how did you move toward the Union, or what kind of introduction did you have to Union?
Well, I would have to go back to when we used to come to California from Arizona every summer. The school was out. We used to come and help my brother. We had a piece of land in Salinas, and he had strawberries. So every summer, we would come down and help him out.
From the time you were a child?
Yes.
Huh?
From 10 years old all the way up to 17 years old. And at 17, I did come to California, and I stayed over here now. But mostly with just, you know, myself and my other sisters, my brothers, coming every summer to Salinas to help him out, to work on the fields with him. Now you ask me, how did I get involved?
Let me interrupt. I forgot to ask you about your brothers and sisters.
There were a total of us 12. I have 8 brothers and 4 sisters. So my dad, my mom made 14. 8 brothers and 4 sisters.
That makes one more. That makes 15.
Well, 15. Yeah, I call myself.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay. Myself,
yeah. That was a big family. Yeah.
And where do you fall in the line of children?
Believe it or not, I'm the last of the family.
You're the youngest?
I'm the youngest. I was 2 of us still alive, the brothers, and I still have my 4 sisters.
Do you want to tell me a little bit about your life in Arizona, how it was for your family and conditions? And
well, again, when we talk about farm workers' conditions, it's always the same all over the country. My dad worked in the fields all his life. I worked in the fields with him too. And those crops were, again, the majority were cotton.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, we're talking about in the 40s, early, late 40s for me, early 50s, and, you know, when 50 cents an hour they were paying up there. $6, $5 a day. That's how much you could make. And I worked about 10 hours, okay? That's 10 hours. It was rough, just like any, even now. I mean, like now, it's still rough. It was, there was no protection. There was no guarantee. There was no sure a job the next day. And, you know, and sure, there was struggles. There was problems, you know. But we managed, you know. We managed with whatever we, you know, we could do. My oldest brothers, when they saw what was happening about, hey, this is not life, you know, this is not a way to live. All of my brothers, at early age, they enlisted in the armed forces, the army, and most of them moved away, you know. And some almost made it a career, you know, 15, 20 years in the service. And other ones, we just continue working in the fields. But yeah, it was rough. You know, back then it was, again, no benefits at all. A lot of the services, a lot of the benefits that we thought we had was not reported, you know. We can still see it around now, you know. It hasn't changed very much. But like I said, we manage. We stick as a family. We helped each other, you know. But like I said, most of my brothers went out and joined the services, so they can get out of that kind of life.
Did you live in town, have a house, or did you live on the ranch?
When I was born, I lived in a house that my father and my brothers built. They lived before, when they came from Texas and New Mexico, they lived in ranches. They lived in the company land where they had some housings. But maybe I was fortunate. I lived in a house that we had no problems with, living in our own home, that compared to living in the ranch.
Can you describe a typical day, say before you came to California, at your home?
Well, it was at 3 o'clock in the morning, every morning, Saturdays and Sundays, people getting up to go to work, people moving around, ready to go out there, start working at 5, 6 in the morning, walking to where they were, pick you up in buses. And that's like, that's every morning, you know, that's every morning. And then working out there in the hot sun all day, coming home, you know, at 5, 6 in the afternoon. And, you know, compared, you know, when talking about Arizona, it's, the heat is very hot out there. It's very humid out there. There was no air condition. There was no cooling system. Most of us, we slept outside in the evenings, you know, in the evenings. We had cots outside. We had mattresses outside. And then we were a big family for the house that we had. So there was no room for all of us, you know. So the guys, the men, the boys slept outside and the girls inside. And to me, that was a daily routine. That every day, 3 in the morning, getting up, making breakfast, getting everybody up, everybody going to different places, going to where the buses stop to pick you up, and then coming back again and start all over the next day.
So what age did you start going to the fields?
I would say at the beginning, about 5 years. 5 years, my family, my dad used to take me with him. At 5 years old, but I actually started working. I was 8. I usually started doing something at eight years old.
That was weekends because you were in school,
right? Yeah, right. On weekends, Saturdays and Sundays. Sometimes we knew the foreman. For example, we knew the man who ran the crew. After school, I used to pick up my little sack and go pick cotton, you know, make 5 cents, 10 cents, you know, pick so many pounds that I can have some money for the weekend. But I think I started eight years old and 9 years old, I started actually working out there and doing my own stuff. You know, I wasn't paid at all sometimes, but I would help my dad. You know.
So you just did you tow a bag or? Or did you put your cotton in your dad's bag?
Yeah, I would have my little small bag, and I would, you know, alongside of him, I would pick the cotton, and then I would give it to him, and he would put it in his bag, and he would take it in and weigh it in and so forth. Mm-hmm. And then he would give me some, you know, some money for whatever we made that day. But I would say, 8 or 9 years old when I really started getting up there every day, you know, in the weekends. And then when I was 13, that's when I really started getting more, you know, making my own and taking my own sacks and taking my own pounds and weighing it and getting some money for it and so forth.
What was the town like?
Very small, and it's still small. I was back there last 2 months ago, and it never grew. Other towns around Eloy, they grew. I don't know if you know that area, but it's Casa Grande. That the small town also grew faster than Eloy. When I was small, the town looked so big, you know. And now when I go back, I see those houses. Man, these are small houses, you know. They're square, you know. All were built by the same architect. I'm not sure, but they were square houses. How could they make houses like that, you know? But it was small, dirt roads, and hardly any pavement. It only had one Catholic church. It only had one theater. A lot of secondhand stores. Yeah, they were making. That's where they make the money. There wasn't a big stores for shopping, you know? So it had everything, but small.
So there were small businessmen that you bought groceries from and that sort of stuff. You didn't have to contend with the growers, that right?
I didn't. I don't remember that. But, it was just their own private business people owning some of those places. Mm-hmm. No.
How was school for you? Were you comfortable in school?
I was comfortable. I liked school a lot. I liked school a lot. I played in all sports. We got trophies there that we won, and it hasn't been done in many, many years when I went to elementary school. I hung around with everybody. We got along with everybody. Indians, Hispanics, Latinos, blacks, whites. We get along pretty good. We had no problem. We had no problem there. And junior high school and high school, same thing. We got along pretty good with the kids, with our own people. There was no fights. Not what we see now about gangs and all that stuff. No, it was nice back then. Again, it was small, so everybody knew each other. We had a good time growing up over there. Too bad there was no jobs, good jobs, no factories. A lot of people had to move out. A lot of people moved out. And like I said, even 2 months ago when I went back there were still some people there. Hey, they stick around. They stayed. They didn't move.
A lot of people. So, let's see. You came to California then from the time you were about 10 years old to work with your brother?
That's right, yes. Like I said, every year, summer school, when we're out of school, we come and help him out.
Mm-hmm. So you graduated from high school in Arizona?
Yes, I did.
And then you moved to California?
No, I stayed around for another couple of years, again, working in the fields. Because that's all it was. Diploma, you know, there was nothing for the diploma to use back then, you know, really, you know. It's just a diploma telling you, you know, how to read and write and, you know, an ad, but that's about it. There was no factories, no jobs, just fields. Then I decided, to come down to California and live over here. By that time, two of my sisters were down here. They were married already. And I told my mother and my dad, I'd like to move. I'd like to move to California. Let me work over there, and I'll send you some money. They said, okay, they gave me permission. So about when I was 17, I moved to California for good.
What year was that?
I was 59, 1958, 59, that's when I made the big move. Move out of Eloy and find some jobs over here. And that's all I did. I came over here. I stayed with my sisters.
Where were?
Salinas.
Salinas?
In Salinas, yeah. Salinas. Well, that's where my brother was. That's where, And by that time, my brother lost the land. There was a big flood, a big rain. And him, and my brother, and his wife, and I don't know, maybe about 10 other small-time farmers lost the crops because of the big rain. And they were like in a slope and a hole, so water just came down and just destroyed all the crops. So he decided, that's enough, I'm not going to get into it anymore. It's no business, and we're not making it. And he was still in the service, so he had something to fall back to, and so he went back into the service full time. And then I started working all the fields in Salinas, all over. The lettuce, tomatoes, the carrots, the celery, everything had to be done in the fields. I did it. Sugar beets, thinning, hoeing, loading, picking, everything. One big company that I worked for was the Barranto Company. He's the largest grower, shipper of lettuce. And they also tried to do something in Arizona, in Eloy, grow lettuce over there. But I guess the weather wasn't that good for that type of crop. We thought that if we moved over there, I might go back home. But it didn't work out. They didn't do business. The crop wasn't that good. So they abandoned it. But I worked for that company for many years. Not many years. I would say about a good solid 4 years with them. Then I worked for Salinas Strawberries. As what they call the locals, and local crew, picking strawberries. Back then, in the 50s, 58, 59, 60s, 61, they had that Bracero program going on. Immigrants from Mexico under contract with the government to come over here and work. In that company, I could understand that company, they only had a crew of 50 people, local citizens, working, and they had over 2,000 braceros working in that field, in that company. And there were a lot of people, out of work, because they had the contract with Mexico to bring people over to work. And I couldn't understand that. There's only 50 of us, and there's 2,000 of them. And sure, there was a lot of people out of work too. So after Salinas Strawberry, I moved around to other places, other jobs. But it was just 2-3 months a year, and so forth. That's mostly been, my experience in working in Salinas. All field. No factories, no retail, no industry, no nothing, just all field.
But with the different crops, with lettuce, carrots, celery, strawberries, whatnot, you were able to work all year round without leaving Salinas then?
Well,
pretty much.
You couldn't call it all year round. It was months only. But I stayed in Salinas 8 years. 8 years. hanged out for 8 years over there working in different crops at different times, maybe 6-7 months out of the year, not 12 months out of the year.
You know, would you describe some of the work for me, like, say, working in the carrots, what it was like in the fields, what exactly you did?
Pulling the bunches out of the ground, taking out the rotten ones, cutting off the stem, packing them, there were different types of work being done. That they just pull them out, just leave them there, clean them out until somebody else will come right behind you and start packing them and washing them off and things like that. And there's all kinds of different things in there on the carrots. I also did some loading the trucks. You know, when there was a shortage of people and people didn't show up, they would call us and say, okay, now start loading, you know, into the bins or into the trucks and the flatbed beds. And we used to plant them too. We used to irrigate them. We used to thin them out. We used to hoe, cut out the weeds, all kinds. Everything that has to be done with every crop in Salinas or in any place, it was done. I did it.
And you planted carrot from seed, right? Did you do that by hand or?
Yeah. Yeah, there were, and it's, like in a small, like this company I worked for, it was a small ranch, it wasn't very big. You know, we make the lines and throw the, you know, the seeds. But there were other people that had more money, other companies that had machines that would just plant. And the same thing is with lettuce and broccoli and so forth, you know.
Carrots had to be, if you planted that way, then carrots had to be thinned, right?
Yes.
And you did that by hand?
By hand.
Just by pulling them?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Some companies were not so advanced like other ones. Technology, whatever. And a lot of things was manual labor. But now we see there's machines coming on. Even the cotton machine, other machines that pick cotton, which is good. I think it's good. I remember Caesar said one time, thank God for machines that came on for cotton. It wasn't made for human beings. You know? And it's true. A lot of people, if you ever see some people that have done that kind of work for all their life, their back is messed up. They're, you know, carrying those 100 pounds up the ladders, dumping it, you know. Yeah, there's some job that said, hey, it wasn't fit for human beings. You know? I'm glad the machines came off. Yeah. And when we looked at it, they were not displaced. They move into other crops. You know? They move into other crops. But some of those, we're glad the machines came in.
And you were in Salinas for 8 years, so that would have been about 1966 when you left Salinas?
I think it would be, let's see, 64.
Where'd you go then?
Early March, next door here to Bixley. I said, well, let's try something else, you know. And again, another brother came over here to Delano, Early March, but he was staying in Early March. And I called him up and I said, what kind of work is it over there? I said, well, we got a lot of grapes here, you know. He says, you know, they're hiring. He says, well, we can get you in. I can talk to the foreman here, whatever. So maybe we made the move. By then I was married. I had two kids. So I moved my family down here. And we landed here in Early March. I didn't know Delano yet, in Early March. And again, it was same town, same type of atmosphere like in Eloy, you know, small, Hispanic, Latinos. There was a lot of families from Eloy that I knew here. So, they also moved down, you know, they moved down here. I started here, working here with my brother. He put me on with the crew. So we started doing grapes. Another different type of crop that I never done before, you know. Grapes. Again, when we talk about grapes, we do everything. From harvesting, from planting it, harvesting and picking and loading, and everything, you know. Gandola, pruning. I guess anything that needed to be done, you know, we've done it. you know, we got it. So I was working here in Early Mart with a company from Porterville with a labor contractor. And as we all know about the history about labor contractors, how they pay you, how they hire you, what they do if they don't like you, things like that. We were working with people like that. Like my father, as far as I remember, my father in Eloy, Arizona, he worked with labor contractors all his life. All his life. And when you try to look for some services for him, for my dad, for my father, you know, it wasn't reported. There wasn't nothing there documented that it was taken out.
You're saying that the contractor was stealing his Social Security money?
Oh, yeah. When after we settled down in Salinas, I asked my father and my mother if they wanted to come down here. Let's get away from Eloy. And they didn't want it to at the beginning because that was their life. That was, well, you know, their home. But then they decided to let's go to Salinas. But they knew Salinas because during the summer when we used to go help my brother, you know, we would come back and forth. So they knew Salinas. So when he came over here, when we brought him over here, we're talking about my dad being in his 70s, you know, my mother in her 60-somethings, years old. We said, well, let's go try to, you know, get some help from the government about Social Security, retirement, supplemental, whatever. And we started checking out his record, and we told him who he worked for, what years did he work for, how did he get paid, how much was he deducted from his check. And we found out from the government or from the agency or the Social Security that nothing was reported for him during all those years. So back then, you know, again, contractors, labor contractors was not reporting all their deductions, although they were taken out of the person, but it was never reported. So he had to go into like welfare instead of his benefits, of his rights that he worked for it. He had to go and we had to help him get into like a welfare system, started getting the old age assistant type of thing, the gold card, whatever they call it. And that's how we started getting some help with it. So then I moved back to Early Mart, and that's why we started working here in Early Mart.
In 64. Mm-hmm. You mentioned while you were working here in Early Mart that you were working for a contractor. Did you tell me details of that? Was he charging you for your bags and tools and rides and food and water? And
well, he charged us for, the ride. We would have to pay him so much a day for him to take us. The food, I didn't know anything about that. I didn't know anything about those things. I would take my lunch. My wife would prepare my lunch. And then my brother says, you don't need your lunch. She says, why? I have to eat. I know, but I mean, there's food over there. Okay. But then the food was awful. It was bad. I had a funny taste to it. I said, I'm not going to eat this. So that's when I said, I want to take my lunch. And the guy says, no, you're going to eat here. You know, we're providing the lunch. I asked him, is it free? He says, no, we're going to charge you because that's a lunch. I said, well, I don't have no money to pay you every day. Don't worry, it's going to be deducted out of your check. So I went along to see what was going to happen. Sure enough, my first check, big old chunk of money was deducted for food, plus the mileage or the, you know, for the ride and so forth. I said, and what was left, I said, $30 all week, you know. This is not working, but my brother said, well, I know, but this is the way it is. I mean, you know, and a lot of people are complaining. and you don't see them here anymore. They said, if you don't like it, find some other place. That's another thing that I didn't like about it. You have to pay for the food. Even if you don't eat it, you still have to pay for it. They counted you anyway. Another thing that I hated, well, we were working in a crew. We were working by contract. Whatever that crew made, it was divided equally among everyone. So in other words, I could be hustling, and I was young, I was strong, I was eager, I wanted to make money, I had a family to support. I would move, I would fast, I would pick fast, I would do my job, and there were other people, you know, slower, they didn't want to do it, they were sitting down, they were taking a break, they were taking this and that, but yet we had to split it with everyone. And I gave my brother, said, that's the way it is. Again, that's another tactic that I didn't like about, hey, I like to make my own money at my own pace and my own, you know, the way I work. But why do I have to split it with somebody else? But that's the way it is. Another thing I didn't like about through the company was that they never tell you how much you were going to be getting paid for that day. You were by contract, look, how much are you going to pay you for per box? Okay, because they pay you per box. The number of boxes that you pay, the money you get. So when we go into a new field, we would ask, how much are we gonna get paid here? Oh, we don't know yet. We're going to have to see how many boxes come out per hour, and then we'll decide what the wage is going to be. So sure enough, we're out there taking our heart out, you know, trying to get a lot of boxes in, and then they would take the first load into the cold storage, and then they would time it. Afterwards, I found out how they were timing it, how many boxes came in, how many people were out there, and then they would come down with the price. And wherever there was a good crop, the money was low. The pay was lower per hour or per box. So that's and it's still going on some places. It's still going on in some places, you know. I would like to know how much am I going to get paid to see if I'm going to get in, go on, if it's going to be worth it or not. Don't tell me 2 or 3 hours afterwards that, hey, you're making a dollar less.
Did you ever actually know how much the contractor was taking off the salary in addition to the other stuff?
Well, in a way, yes. They were getting so much per head, per person. Like, he had a crew of 20, the company would pay him a dollar for each one. So he was getting $20 right off the top, counting us.
I see.
Then he would get so much per load or so much per box that we made. If I'm going to get 20 cents per box, he automatically would get 3 cents out of that, and that would make 17 cents.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So he got that right off the top again. So the more boxes I make, the more money he made. Then he would make money, more money, in providing the ride, the gas, the food. I mean, yeah, they were making a killing. They were making a killing. You know? So mostly that's how they get paid. You know, so much per person, so much per box, and then whatever else he's doing it on his own business, you know. And we would tell him, this is not working. We're not making enough here. So, well, that's all that the boss is playing. I mean, the boss wants to pay. That's all he wants to pay. Well, this is not enough. You know? Well, I'll go out there and tell him. And he would say he would go out there and tell him, but we know he did. You know, he'd get around the bush and go to town and go party or whatever. Then he would come back and say, no, he said no. That's all we have. He can't afford it anymore. And if you don't like it, well, try next door. And that's the way it was for many years, a lot of years and many times. You know. That's how he would make his money. Per person, per box, plus the ride, plus the food. And to top it off, all those things that he didn't report, that he had to report. Social Security, you know, all that money. and then I put.
You were in early March, starting in 64 then. Is that when you encountered the union?
The union didn't start it until 1965, the huelga, the strike.
Yes.
But I heard about Cesar Chavez, people talking, a radio, newspaper about his thing when he started his movement. The strike didn't start until in 65. September 16th. We could say the National Farm Workers Association, where he started, but the Filipinos, the AWOC, I think it's the Agricultural Workers Organizing Committee, AWOC, they started 1 week earlier. So there was a strike going on with Filipinos, and we were working, and we heard it, but we didn't know what was going on until on September the 16th, 1965, 8 days afterwards, a week afterwards, that's when Chavez Union Association went out on strike. I joined the strike a week after it started. So, remember the date is 16th, 23rd, 24th, something like that. I joined the strike. We were working in early March, and we were hearing, yelling, screaming, huelga, huelga, and they were saying, it's coming, it's near, it's around here, we can hear it. But before, on a Friday, I think it was a Friday night, there was a meeting, and Cesar was holding meetings every night during the strike in every town, with groups of membership, he had members, or any worker that wanted to come to a meeting. And I went to a meeting in town in early March, and that's the first time I saw the man. I seen pictures of him, and I heard about him. But I went to that meeting, and I think it was, I can't remember the name of the family, I think it was Diaz, Jose Diaz house, where the meeting was planned. And there was a lot of people out there, all men, the majority were all men, farm workers. They were having a meeting. I couldn't see him. I said, where is he? Where is the man? Where is he? And there were so many people in front of me, I couldn't see him, I thought he was, big man, tall, husky, No, this is a short guy. Yeah, I finally got up close enough, and I said, oh, that's him, I looked at him, and he started talking, and everything what he was saying, it says, yes, that's me, that's my dad, it happened to me, it happened to us, and everything, And he says, and join us, brothers. He was telling, join us. We need your help. We can win this thing. Come on, now's the time. But we know that Cesar was not ready for the strike. We know that. He was just barely starting to organize people. I can remember that he said, or to other members of the union, that maybe he was not ready until maybe 5 years. Maybe he was talking about in the 70s. Because he was just barely, getting memberships and so forth. But because of the Filipinos, they went on strike first. He had to make a decision that we're breaking the strike. Our brothers need help, and we are breaking the strike. So that's when they decided, let's go help them. But when he was talking, he said, you can come to the office. We're located here in Albany Street. Come to the office, sign up with us, tell us where you work at and everything, and we'll go out there and help, This was on a Friday meeting, Monday. At 7 o'clock, I was there at the office. And they asked me, can I help you? You need something? Can I help you? He says, well, Cesar called me. What? Well, he said, Oh, what company you work for, like getting all the information and say who's the foreman, where they at, where are the crews and all that. And that's why I started.
So, were they picketing your field that Monday?
They were not picketing that particular field, but they were picketing the company.
Mm-hmm.
But they haven't hit us yet. I wanted them to come over. But I guess Caesar beat me to the punch. He was talking, so I joined. Then my brother, 3 days later, my brother came over, and his friends came over. And by the time they went to that particular crew, I mean, everybody was out, mostly. It was just a foreman, about three or four people working.
In that first week or so, did you meet anybody else from the union that you remember besides Caesar?
Did I remember? Oh, yeah. A lot of friends, a lot of the old people that we knew in Arizona, a lot of families that also came out on strike.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people that I worked at other places, they knew me or that. Yes, I met a lot of people.
Do you remember who from the union was running the local, the office?
I think Gilbert Padilla. Gilbert Padilla was the main one, too. He's the one that came over to me in the meeting and he looked at me and says, what do you think? I looked at him and says, he's right what he's saying. And then he looked at me again and said, well, make up your mind. And that's when, on Monday, I made up my mind, I went over there. But it was Gilbert Padilla. And at that time, everybody was doing everything. I mean, you know, it's hard to say which one, but Gilbert Padilla was, I think they say, the main one there.
Uh-huh.
Well, Caesar was the main one. But Gilbert Padilla was the one who was out there doing more.
What happened then after you joined the union, after that Monday? What kind of things were you involved in?
Then all hell broke loose. Every day we would meet at a place early in the morning. They would give us orientation. We're gonna go this route, we're gonna go this crew, we're gonna go this field, and da-da-da-da. Can you guys tell me where there's some more crews since you've been out there, we started giving information, and we just go on the picket line every day, you know? Picket line. Yelling and screaming and talking to people, get out, come on, this is a strike, come on, this is what you've been waiting for. You need your help, I mean, you know, back then, we had over about 4,000 or 5,000 people on strike. The industry was paralyzed. It was paralyzed, you know? We were having trouble with everybody else. The farm workers, no problem. We were having problem with the police. We were having problem with the press. Every day was incredible. Every day was something new happening, you know? And we would go out to all the crews. They were coming out. They were walking. They were throwing their shears away, their scissors away, their sacks away. This was a general strike. It was a general strike. Yeah. We had a Filipino hall that we shared with the Filipinos, the organization. Every lunch we go out there and eat, and we take an hour and a half off, and then back at by 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, we're out in the fields again. You know, but every day was picket.
How long were you on the picket line?
About 4 years. Every day was something going on.
How did you take care of your family while you were on the line?
It was rough. I had a little bit of money saved, not that much, but back then it was good. We used some of that to pay some of the things that we had. I lost a car in the union. How did we live? The union have a lot of money, and they were trying to help as many as people as they can. They had a stipend for us. They had like an allowance for us. They were paid so much. like the necessities, like rent, utilities, food, and sometimes clothing. Everybody that was in the union, we had a stipend, we had a little budget. Other stuff we had to let go. We had to let go. A lot of people lost a lot of stuff. A lot of people sacrificed. And if you talk to them now, which you're going to be talking to them now, they're going to tell you, and like I'm telling you right now, it was worth it. For what we did, for what was happening, and what the future for this union looked like, it was worth it. It was a sacrifice, but it was worth it. So whatever money the union could get through donations, it was distributed among the families that needed, you know, to survive. You know, that's how we lived. There was a budget, a small budget, a little stipend, a little allowance that we were getting paid. They used to give us $5, again, allowance, a stipend for personal use, $5 a week. And that was weekly. Sometimes we were happy that Friday was coming along, that we needed our $5, and then they said, sorry guys, there's no money, maybe next week. You know? And then they said, well, next week we'll get 10. But no, it was 5. You know? And that's the way it was. So yes, a lot of people suffered. But again, we're saying it was a well sacrifice issue.
So the expenses plus $5 a week when it was there extended to almost everybody that was out on the picket line?
It was more to the people that stayed on. More the people that stayed on. Other people, other strikers, they decided, I'm going home. We're going back to Texas. We're going back to Mexico. We're going back to Arizona. Wherever they came from, you know, get in the way. Other people move on to other ranches to work where we're not striking. And we would tell people, look, we're not striking this company. We're striking the big company. Go work with them. You know. So we would send them. So and other people, well, you know, other people say, well, no, I'm going back to work. You know. But it was not like for the 4,000 or 5,000 people. It was just so many hundreds or thousands that the union had enough money to pay.
For that 4 years that you were working as a picketer, sort of for the union, where were you working? What local office were you working out of? Who were you working with?
Well,